Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. As always, conversations with people that care and do on the upswing. That's what we're all about. Intersecting life, business, and community. And where do most of us do all of that for the majority of our lives? Well, in the workplace. So Beth Ridley is back with us today. She's a Fortune 100 corporate executive, turned entrepreneur, organizational transformation expert, speaker, author, and CEO of the Ridley Consulting Group. Has 25 years of leadership and management consulting experience. Beth, we got cut short a little time on our first visit last month due to some breaking news. So yeah. I'm like, all right, I need to have Beth back on the show. So I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here.
I'm so happy to be here, Jeff. Thank you for having me back.
All right. So looking at the Business Journal this morning, and Metro Milwaukee has slid out of the best places to live list as other metro ranks in the area a little higher. So let me just get preface this for you, and I want to get your thoughts. After ranking 65 on a major livability ranking in the U.S., Metropolitan Milwaukee has dropped out of the 100 top spaces to live, but two other metro areas have ranked pretty high. Can you guess what those other metro areas are?
In Wisconsin. Well, Madison for sure.
Yes.
Racine?
Not quite. Gotta go a little farther north.
Farther north?
Yes.
Franklin?
Green Bay.
Oh, Green Bay, that kind of north. Okay.
That far
I
north.
I was being too local.
In Wisconsin,
Bay,
you're going
Green
too
Bay.
Hyper-local.
Yeah. Okay.
So Milwaukee fell from 65 in the U.S. News and World Report's Best Places to Live list to 112. When you're talking to different corporations and your partners, what are you hearing about the positioning of Metro Milwaukee?
So I would have to say I'm actually really surprised for a couple of reasons. One, it's a more accessible, livable city. And now that a lot of companies are hiring remotely, Milwaukee should be one of those great places where you can live here, take advantage of all of the amenities that we have. It's easy to get to stuff, but even, you know, work nationally or even globally. So I'm surprised by that. And the other thing I'm surprised by, I actually thought it was going to be the opposite, more of an influx of a migration to Milwaukee because our weather is actually becoming the only inhabitable place in the United States with, you know, the West Coast, all the weather that they're having, south on fire. Our summers are wonderful and the winters are not as harsh as I remember them being.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It shows we have work to do. And the reality is that perception becomes reality. So you don't know exactly what the questions are with these type of surveys or what people's frame of minds are when they answer these type of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, crime plays a portion, perception plays a portion.
Yeah.
So we got to continue to do our work in the recruitment and retention game here. Metro Milwaukee, Green Bay Metro ranked one last year, and it fell to 12, and Madison ranked 14, and it just slipped a little bit to 11 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So as we are coming in, Beth, it's kind of funny. I thought I saw you from across the way at the Baird Gala last week, which it wasn't you. And I texted you right away. And I'm like, oh, Beth, I'm going to come over and say hi.
And I said it was Halle Berry.
That's right. We always get confused. So.
What are you hearing, though, in terms of the opening of the Baird Center and how that could affect Metro
Milwaukee?
Oh,
my gosh. Well, so much excitement. And that's like another reason why I'm shocked, because honestly, I feel like Milwaukee's having a revival. So the new Baird Center, you know, we had Top Chef here. The RNC is bringing in more, you know, notoriety, and people are here. The NFL draft that is at least coming, well, to Green Bay, but Milwaukee, the spillover. So I just feel like there's a lot of momentum. Visit Milwaukee's been doing an awesome job. So I hear nothing but excitement. But again, maybe for people who are already here, it's how do we change the narrative for people who maybe still have a negative impression about Milwaukee.
Yeah, and same here. I've heard nothing but positive feedback. And, you know, feedback is pretty big in the workplace. So yeah. When we come back from the first break, we are going to talk about those one-on-one corporate meetings that we all do no matter where we work. This is The Upswing, and we're talking today with Beth Ridley. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing, talking workplace today with Beth Ridley. So, feedback in the workplace, Beth. You know, stigmas around mental health, especially during May, Mental Health Awareness Month, are slowly breaking down. Employees aren't always really forthcoming when they're struggling, kind of due to, what, fears of being judged or misunderstood. Maybe they're isolated. They don't want to be seen as weak when they're talking to their managers. And, you know, it's the goal of managers to be supportive.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're not mind readers, right?
Or therapists.
Or therapists, right. So how can companies kind of better support mental health for employees as they build their cultures of inclusivity and belonging?
I think there are a couple of things that managers can do to create the environment for people to either feel like they're emotionally well at work or have the opportunity to speak up if they are not. And again, without a manager having to pry too much in someone's personal life or feel like they have to fix anything, that's not the role of the manager, not a therapist. But one thing is just modeling that you care about emotional well-being and mental health yourself. So it could be even talking about, I'm looking forward to my time off or my vacation, or I went for a walk this morning, or I actually am learning how to meditate. So it just sort of signals that you care about it. It sets the tone that, okay, this is something that is important, and we don't expect people to just be robots and not be humans when they come to work.
Yeah. So what's the power of the regular one-on-one meeting, and how should they be best handled?
So the power of the regular one-on-one is, one, you really just get to know your employees and you understand their set point. So again, not a therapist, not a mind reader, but you can tell if someone is not themselves. So if somebody's usually a chatty person and then they're really quiet, you really only notice that if you spend enough time with your employees. And so then you can sort of understand or appreciate, hey, is something going on? Is there any way that I can help? Or even just ask just benign questions like, hey, how are you doing? Or, you know, how are you feeling these days? And so I think the most important thing is to actually just have one-on-ones consistently, and also to carve out some time in the one-on-ones to check in with the individual as a person and not only make it just about status updates and about work.
So as you work with clients, whose job is it to create the agendas for those meetings? Is it the manager, or is it the employee, or is it a collaborative process?
I think a collaborative process could be amazing. Everybody wants to feel like they matter and their input matters, and it's not like you're being summoned to the principal's office and my boss has the agenda and it just benefits him or her. So I think you could say, hey, part of these meetings is to appreciate, you know, how work is going, how we can better support you in your role. Also, I'd like to get to know you and just create a trusting relationship. What's the best way for you that we can achieve that goal together?
So I'm an agenda guy. So when I go into meetings, no matter if it's a one-on-one or not, I like to do SWOT analysis for myself and what I'm doing now. So I do like strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats as I see them in this 2-week period.
I like that.
Have you seen anything along those lines, like creative agendas for these meetings?
I like that. I actually haven't heard of that one in a one-on-one.
Okay, there's my idea for the day.
And I think it's a really good idea, and that's the value of asking other people. I personally would not have thought of that, but I think it's worth a try, especially if it works for the other person to accomplish that shared goal. Absolutely. I think it's a great idea.
So what are some of the questions that should be asked in the one-on-one meeting?
Well, I think in terms of, again, back to this topic of mental health and mental well-being, I think questions like, how's your workload? Because a lot of times people will sort of stress over the volume of work. Yeah. How are the team dynamics from your standpoint? Do you feel confident speaking up and sharing your ideas? Is there anything that I can do to better support you? So some of it is work related, but someone's, I think, emotional well-being to the degree that they feel engaged in order to actually do the work to the best of their ability.
Okay. So we're all doing these wonderful one-on-one meetings, but some of your research and a lot of what's being talked about nationally says that many people are still lonely at work. So I want to explore loneliness at work. That's up next. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I don't like to talk about sad things on the show. It's not called The Downswing, Beth Ridley.
That's
but you've had some fascinating insights on loneliness in the workplace. And it's kind of bubbling up on a national level and, you know, hitting locally, too. Even the Surgeon General is talking about it. Fast Company last month had a big feature on loneliness in the workplace. A growing cohort of experts are kind of ringing alarm bells about loneliness epidemic and kind of why workplace stress, no matter what size of the company it is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And you call it kind of a silent struggle.
Yeah.
What's it? What are you hearing and what's it all about?
Yeah. So first of all, to keep it on the upswing, talking about it makes us happier.
There we go.
So that's the segue. But I think first to, let me even just give my own definition, or not my own definition, but the definition of loneliness. A lot of times people think it's like, oh, I either work with a lot of people or I don't, or I work remotely or I'm in the office. It has nothing to do with geography and has nothing to do with the amount of people that you work with. Loneliness is really the gap between the quality of the relationships that you want and the quality of relationships that you have. So each of us will sort of have our own set point around, are we feeling lonely or not, based on the quality of relationships that we want and the quality of relationships that we actually have. And probably no surprise, in the workplace, even though unfortunately we work so much with people, we don't necessarily feel we have a genuine, strong connection with people. We don't really feel that people understand us. We can confide in people. We just don't feel like we can be ourselves at work without it holding us, you know, without people holding it against us.
So what are some of the key indicators that are often kind of overlooked as you're thinking about, oh, they're just not feeling themselves? How can you look into that lens?
Well, again, it's like just the person's set point, you know. Is somebody feeling, you know, disengaged, or they're not talkative, and they usually are, or, you know, they're running late and they're usually on time or early. Those are all indications that maybe something is going on either in one's personal life, but it also bleeds over into the work world as well. And if we don't feel like we can talk, and I think that's the one key thing about managers, you don't have to solve problems. People actually don't want you to solve their problems, but it is so beneficial to just be able to talk and to feel like someone is listening and understands.
My grandma always said, we have two ears and one mouth for a reason, Jeff.
Yeah.
And you have those 2 years to listen and take it all in and be a part of the solution. So speaking of solutions, I mean, whose job is it to combat the isolation and the loneliness? Is it on both the employee and the manager and the company? Because I'm guessing it's different in really, really big companies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the isolation feels different because there's more work at home. There's a whole lot more screen time.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody, right? The company usually has a responsibility to offer resources, you know, mental health, well-being resources that employees can tap into. We talked about the manager at least setting the tone and modeling that mental health is something that's top of mind and they care about it. And then honestly, employees, we always have to advocate for ourselves. And I think interesting stat, some of the individuals at work who are the loneliness are men. And I think it's because they are not necessarily forthcoming about how they're feeling or proactive in building and finding relationships. Whereas I'm being, you know, assumptions and stereotypes.
Right,
women
right.
might be a little bit more forthcoming in terms of inviting each other out for coffee to build and nurture those relationships.
And also they probably haven't been told through their career, hey, come to work being your most authentic, real, natural self. And you tend to put up barriers.
We all do.
And you're like, hey, I'm just working. I'm getting stuff done. That's what I'm doing.
Yes.
But when you step back and become a bigger, better version of yourself, that thing that's inside of you, you're like, all right, I got to go with this.
Absolutely.
But that's tough. It's tough if you haven't done it your whole career.
Yeah. And I think most of us are used to, it's called masking, not the, mm-hmm. not the COVID masking, but hiding who we are in order to fit in, or working hard to not stand out too much out of fear of being judged or not feeling accepted. And we all do it to some extent.
Yes.
We all do it. And some of us just have a different way of carrying that burden, but it can feel like a burden, especially if you feel like, you know, there's a work Beth and then there's a home Beth.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And a lot of times we do feel that we're two different people.
Yeah.
And it can be tiring.
And so you're saying those two people should be just one in any scenario.
Ideally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't have to switch who we are or pretend who we are. And we all do it to some degree because all companies have standards or codes. And, you know, we can't be fully ourselves. We have
right.
to be our best or better selves. But there are degrees to which we have to feel like, you know, are you hiding your religion or a core piece of your identity? And that's kind of hard to continue to mask that if it's a big piece of who you are and your own sense of self.
Yeah. Well, and it's so much a part of kind of what we'll talk about later in the show, kind of personal branding and positioning on social and LinkedIn too, and how you kind of manage who you are through these communications that aren't necessarily all with coworkers, but are positioning yourself as a leader or an employee or a mom or a dad or whatever you want to be.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to get your thoughts on that. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about balancing family and work and what that looks like in Beth's life and all of our lives. Welcome back to The Upswing. Thankful that Beth Ridley, CEO of Ridley Consulting Group, joins us today. Talk about life, work, balance, connections, collaboration within the workplace. The WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. You have questions as we continue our conversation. So Beth, in your life, in all of our lives, is work-life balance a reality? And how do you position that to your clients?
I think it's more like work-life harmony. Mm-hmm. Balance suggests equal, and on any right. given day it may not be equal, but is it working for you more often than not? I think maybe we have opportunities to trend a little bit better in that direction for two reasons. One, the flexibility to do a little bit more work at home for some jobs does give people that opportunity to integrate a little bit of life with their work, even if it's throwing a load of laundry in between meetings. That's helpful.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing is, again, to this topic of inclusion and belonging, we're just getting used to realizing a cookie cutter approach, a one size fits all, doesn't really cut it. And so we're being a little bit more flexible in what we allow.
Yeah.
So for example, if somebody has to come in later a certain day of the week due to child drop off or something like that, I think that's far more an acceptable conversation or even something to ask than even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I really like life work sync because it kind of gives you that, all right, you got to be in a flow and you got to be in a sync. And like you said, that could be different for everyone and that's okay. And then life work integration. Like there are just days that, hey, family and work have to come together and that's totally okay. You can't just say it's either this or that. You got to integrate it all because we're living.
Right. Yeah.
So how do you counsel companies? Is it different in the Midwest where we have this, we work hard and that's what we do, Beth, don't tell me that I have to have life work sync?
I may challenge you on that, Jeff,
okay.
if I may,
all right.
at
you,
the risk of never being invited
can.
Back again.
Oh, hey, we're going to agree to disagree. Maybe we'll talk about that in the next segment,
but
too.
Yeah. Well, I have clients all over the country, and I think people just are working really hard. It's not exclusive to the Midwest.
Okay.
They
All
work
right.
really, I've lived in New York for many years. We worked hard there. I actually think Americans work hard. My son just did a study abroad in Europe and traveled all throughout Europe. And I was like, how was it? Could you envision living there? He's like, they just don't work as hard. No, he's young, so he wants to work hard. So I was like, is that a bad thing? But I think Americans, it's our ethics. It's in our ethos. I think we know we just have to, if we want something, we have to work hard. It's a big country. A lot of people are after what we want. With that aside, one thing I actually will say I like about the Midwest is we still do have those traditional family values. I don't think that they've gone away. And I've noticed when I moved here from New York City, where people would work so hard, they'd be working till 10 o'clock at night and then go get dinner. Here, people, I think, make an effort to come home and eat dinner at 6 with the family. Like, not across the board, but more than I've seen in any other parts of the country. So I do think that that helps us. We are hardworking. We're dedicated. We're grinders. And we do prioritize family, I think, in a good way. My take.
All right. I love it. So we're different, but not all too different here in the beautiful Midwest. When we come back from the break, I heard a CEO recently talk about recruitment and retention, and she said, the one question you always have to ask in an interview is this. Let me ask this. If someone is a high performer and a total jerk, how will that be handled in this company? We'll talk about that when we come back. We're talking with Beth Ridley. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, talking with Beth Ridley, CEO of Ridley Consulting Group, workplace issues and more. So Beth, I heard a CEO talk recently and said, everyone should bring this question to the table if you're in an interview. If somebody at this company is a really high performer, doing great work, generating a ton of revenue for the company, but is a total jerk, how will that be handled in this company?
Brilliant question. I love it because it speaks to so many things. It really speaks to culture and expectations of what it means to be a valued employee. And my guess is no matter what the hiring person in the interview says, most companies will I call this the toxic rock star.
Okay.
Most companies will prioritize rock star and results over how they do it to their own demise and detriment about the culture. I mean, that is the fastest way to kill a good culture because people look around and they see what's rewarded. And it doesn't matter what you say. They say, well, if that behavior gets me good results and there are no consequences, I can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the worst thing. And the one thing I'm so passionate about this because it happens all the time and people always prioritize outcomes and they're so forgiving about, you know, the bad behavior. And I like to tell people, you are paying employees too much to not expect both. People who are good at their jobs and also good people exist, and find them. And if you can't find them, you're just not looking hard enough.
Yeah.
But why are you paying all this money for, you know, you're getting a suboptimal employee? Because that's only half the equation. It's not hard to be good at your job and to be, you know, not a horrible person.
Yeah, the proverbial, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Those things can both coexist, and that's okay. And you know what? That's what is expected.
That's what's expected. And it's lazy and easy to, you know, be a bad person and get your job done. So why are you lowering the bar for everybody else?
Yeah. So the Wall Street Journal yesterday had a piece, How Can We Better Disagree? And you look at kind of disagreement and agreement and agree to disagree, those type of conversations in the workplace. So it's a really good example. An NFL medical official went to a player that had just had knee surgery. The team knew that the player couldn't come back on the timeline the player wanted. The team wanted 2 months of rest, and the official knew it was going to be a really tough conversation. So to prepare, he imagined how the player was feeling and rehearsed what he wanted to say first. Then he picked up the phone and spoke the words that he memorized and said, "Hello, I need your help. We're going to disagree here, but we're going to have a good discussion." And the article went on to say conversations tend to become heated because we're wired to have a fight or flight response when we feel threatened, especially during times of stress. And times of stress can be delivering tough news.
Yeah, for sure.
So how do you counsel your clients to have these type of discussions in the workplace?
Oh, I actually do a ton of training on this because it really falls under the bucket of inclusive leadership. Listening and seeking to understand versus agree. And so I think the shortest way that I counsel people on how you can do that is by not making your point of view or winning the argument the desired outcome. Enter the conversation that my goal is to understand. And there's nothing wrong with having multiple conversations to get to the desired outcome. But if you go in saying, okay, this is what I'm going to say, this is how I'm going to say it, I'm anticipating what they're going to say, I'm going to outmaneuver them because the goal is to win my argument, then you're always going to be at an impasse. But if you go in and saying, my goal is to just understand, I've won because I better understand, and that helps me.
And so often, a little bit of friction is okay. And
that's
that
okay.
Gets us to the better outcome, because or else you might have a little too early of a groupthink process and everyone thinking the same and you're not getting the best outcome.
Yeah. Suboptimal.
So, that's right.
Groupthink. Suboptimal.
That is right. All right. We want to optimize. That's what we're doing. Optimizing for the modern workplace with Beth Ridley. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Upswing Modern Workday Challenges and Opportunities with Beth Ridley, CEO of Ridley Consulting Group. Beth, over the break, you said, you know, sometimes just, I don't know, you know, being polite and professional isn't quite enough in the workplace. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. So like I said, to your point earlier, Midwesterners work really hard. I was like, maybe, maybe not. Midwesterners, I will say, are really nice. And so a lot of times when I go in and I say, hey, we can make your culture more inclusive and a sense of belonging, they're like, but we're so nice to everybody. We're polite and professional. I have to remind them that doesn't really cut it. That just gives you a culture of tolerance.
Hmm.
You know people are different and you're okay right. with the differences, but you're just like, nah, you do you. I'm going to do me. I'm not going to stray into territory where I'm uncomfortable because we prefer to be comfortable and nice and polite in the Midwest. And I think we leave a lot on the board. Like, if we're not challenging ideas, if we're not asking questions, if we're not having tough conversations, again, nice and polite leads to groupthink, and that leads to suboptimal outcomes. So I think in the Midwest, actually, the clients I work with, we do have to get beyond. It's not about not being nice.
Right. But we're going, like, to be collaborative and kind and nice. That's okay.
We need to do more
than sometimes
that.
We need to have, you know, friction-based conversations. That's okay. But you look at the education system, and we talked about this a little bit over the break too, is that personal finance is finally in the schools, right? You know what also needs to be in the schools? Debate is kind of a thing that some kids take. Debate should be for all kids, and it must be mandatory, because you learn to have agreeable, disagreeable discussions.
You learn to do that. You learn to articulate a thought. You learn to listen. And back to your point, the only way we learn and grow is if we are able to push ourselves outside of our comfort zone. We do not learn in our comfort zones. We don't. We just get more of the same. That makes us comfortable. But when we hear challenging ideas, even if we don't agree, who cares? But if we're learning something from somebody else, it's a new piece of knowledge, and it makes us smarter. And it broadens our own perspective. So, yeah, and I don't think we have good examples of people disagreeing in a respectful way on TV. It's a lost art. I was saying it's like cursive. We don't teach that in school anymore. But I think, you know, the trajectory of where we're going, like, we have to be able to bridge across these differences in a healthier way.
Yes, that's good. So tomorrow on the show, the Thursday show, is always the future of almost everything. Steve Glenn and Martin Moore will join. We're going to go over four different graduation speeches, two local, two national, and analyze them a little bit. I'm not going to play this. You'll have to tune in tomorrow to hear the tidbit from Jerry Seinfeld. But Jerry Seinfeld spoke at Duke this year, and one of his key points was that passion doesn't necessarily fuel success. It's all about fascination.
Mm.
As you're talking to recent college graduates, how do you position, all right, you want to be successful, here's what you need to do. A lot of people say, I'm going to go where my heart is. I'm going to go where my passion is.
Yeah.
That's what's going to make me successful. What do you think about that?
I say whatever motivates you to get up, and success to me is consistency. So doing something on the days when you don't feel like it, doing something on the days where you wonder what's the point, it's the consistency. So whether it's passion that makes you consistently get up, or fascination, which I think is another word for curiosity,
yeah.
I don't care. And if I think about my own life, on a Tuesday, it's passion. On a Thursday, it could be fascination. The two intertwine. And one day, it might be like, I just got to make more money. So I don't care. You know what I mean? But it keeps me going and moving forward, which I think is the key to success.
Again, you can do both. You can have passion. You can have fascination. But you got to manage it. You got to put it together. And you got to know how to work your plan and plan your work. So what's the rest of your day look like, Beth?
Ooh, well, I'm going to go home and I'm going to get ready to listen to you tomorrow, because I can't wait to hear about the graduation speeches, the analysis of it. I think that's like really cool. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Very good. We thank you for listening to The Upswing today. Beth Ridley, CEO of the Ridley Consulting Group. She'll be back in the next couple of weeks, because we got some fun new programming that we're brewing and thinking up. Tomorrow on the show again, the future of almost everything with Steve Glenn and Martin Moore.